We're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. My next guest is Michelle Bernard, founder, president, and CEO of the Bernard Center for Women, Politics, and Public Policy. She's a frequent political and legal analyst on MSNBC, also a guest commentator on National Public Radio, contributor to the Huffington Post and the Washington Post's She the People, also author of several books, including Moving America Toward Justice and Women's Progress, How Women Are Wealthier, Healthier, and More Independent Than Ever Before. Tonight, Michelle Bernard will speak at Iowa State University as the Spring 2015 Mary Louise Smith Chair in Women and Politics. Her topic, how women, American women, are changing politics. And she joins us this half hour. Michelle Bernard, welcome to our program.
Thank you so much.
I want to reach out to our listeners. We're challenging, Michelle, our listeners in our social media this hour. In five words or less, what is the state of gender equity in politics? Send that to our tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. In five words or less, your take on the state of gender equity in politics. Give us, in a nutshell, if you could, Michelle, your take on the state of American women in politics today.
I think that the state of American women in politics today is excellent. You know, I am somebody who looks at it as the glass as being half full rather than glass empty, half empty. We continue to make strides in every aspect of American political life, whether it is as elected leaders at local and state levels, whether it is, elected leaders at the federal level, appointed people, as cabinet secretaries, et cetera, to grassroots movements on issues that span everything from education reform to health care, to women's rights, to, violence against women, to, the war on terrorism. Women's voices today are being heard and I think are having a true influence on the way that we run our nation. So things are good. Is there room for improvement? Absolutely. But are things better than ever? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You said excellent was the first word when I asked you. Excellent, the state of American women in politics today. Yet only about 20% of the seats in Congress are held by women. How can you give it an excellent grade when we have seen, let's say, emancipation, the rise of women in so many sectors of life, but it's been very slow in coming to Congress? Iowa, lagging behind in that sector, electing its first member of Congress only this last election.
Yes. Well, there are two ways to look at it. That those numbers are not. Could it be better? My answer is yes. But could it be worse? Absolutely. In the area, for example, of racial justice, we have seen the country begin to take many steps backward rather than forward. We're not seeing that. That is not necessarily the case in terms of gender justice and the equality that we see of women getting involved in politics. In a lot of other countries, and I say this as somebody who I self-identify as a feminist and absolutely believe that the country would be better off if we had more women as policymakers. But if you compare us to countries that that have larger numbers of women in office, oftentimes people don't realize that their systems are different than ours because they have a quota system in many countries to help boost those numbers. And I'm not against the quota system, but the reality is we don't have that in the United States. And as we get to a point in time where more and more women are willing to run for office, and it's a dirty business, but as we get to a point in time where more and more women are interested in running for office, I think that we will see more and more women win.
Mm-hmm. To follow up on that, why don't the number of women match the number of men that run for office? It's often very difficult to get women to run for office, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, think about it. Particularly from a woman's perspective, you come under scrutiny that no man would ever come under. I frequently say when you see a male running for office, say governor of any state, you never hear people in the media saying, "Wow, look at that comb over," or "Look over, look at that, look at his, belly fat." Go back to 2008, media commentary about Hillary Clinton's dress, Hillary Clinton's cleavage, Hillary Clinton's pantsuits.
What about that same election? John Edwards' hair. I am pretty. You know, that whole viral thing.
Yeah, it didn't really, but it didn't hurt him the way that it hurt Hillary Clinton. Comments about Sarah Palin and how she would be, how on earth could she be vice president when she had so many children. You don't hear people ever ask those type of questions about men who are running for office, and it is demeaning. It is demeaning to women, and it sort of changes the frame of reference sometimes that voters have when they decide who they're going to vote for. The good news is that the kind of comments that we saw in 2008 have dissipated greatly, and we are seeing more of an awareness by members of the media and also by women that they can run on the same terms of men and win and govern just as well, if not better.
Mm-hmm. How would our governing, generally speaking, governing by women, how does that, when you have a greater number of women, how does governing change? You said, I'm trying to remember your exact words, but we have a better system, would be better governed with more women in office.
Well, because, conventional wisdom, particularly in Washington where I live, is that if you take a look at the members of Congress who are women in both the House and the Senate, women want to move the ball forward and are much more willing to find areas of common ground to do so, to reach across party lines, to pass, to enact legislation, write legislation, and do everything they can to get it passed, whether they are working with someone from their own political party or not, to sort of put politics as usual behind them and do what is in the best interest of the nation. And, if you look from anywhere else outside of Washington looking in, the way that our government works and has worked recently really makes absolutely no sense, and it is in no way in the best interests of anyone that lives in the United States. But we see female members of Congress willing to work across party lines and move the ball forward, and I think that we can only be enriched as a nation if we continue to see that kind of work.
In 2014, Iowa elected its first female member of Congress, Senator Joni Ernst, now Iowa's freshman senator. I wonder how much have you examined what made her such a successful female candidate?
You know, I think that Joni Ernst was successful because she ran a good campaign. She was genuine. She did not seem afraid by any stretch of the imagination to state her views on various issues. And, Iowans are so famous for wanting to know their candidates. And Joni Ernst, from what I can see to the greatest extent possible, was willing to be an open book with Iowans and explain to them why she would do a good job for their state in the Senate.
Okay, you didn't mention anything about gender. What part, if any, did her gender play in her success?
I don't think it played any role in her success, and I think that that's a wonderful thing. I think when we get to a point in time where we look at people as being the best candidate versus the best female candidate or the best male candidate or the best African American or Latino candidate, that is when we have achieved everything that our founders had hoped for the nation. I think she was the best candidate. And being a woman didn't have any. I don't think people went out and voted for her because she was a woman. I think they voted for her because they liked her and they thought that she would do the best for them in Washington.
The Iowa caucus is less than a year away. Michelle Bernard, you have your eyes on that date. I'm sure as well as we do here in Iowa. The big question I'd like you to answer, been asked for months: will Hillary Clinton run?
I believe that Hillary Clinton is running. There's always the small chance that she won't, but everything that we have seen her do, from her book tour last year to the listening tour that was touted last week that she's getting ready to start, is a strong indication that Hillary Clinton is going to win, and is going to run. And let me say, I actually have been a proponent of saying that if Hillary Clinton actually decides to run, I would like to see her make that announcement from Iowa. I think it would be an amazing thing for the country to witness. She lost Iowa in 2008, and losing Iowa was the beginning of the end of her campaign. And to come back to Iowa, launch a campaign here, and explain to the nation through the eyes of Middle America why she is the best candidate to be the next president of the United States, I think would be fascinating.
Political pundits, people talk about Hillary Clinton fatigue or Clinton fatigue in general. How does she combat that, or does she need to?
You know, it's a double-edged sword. There's Clinton fatigue, there's Bush fatigue, there's, you know, every sort of fatigue on both sides of the aisle. But Hillary Clinton is her own person. She is not her husband. I think what Hillary Clinton it needs to be more concerned with is not so much fatigue of the Clinton name, but giving Americans an understanding of what she stands for and why they should vote for her. How is the nation going to be different if Hillary Clinton is the president of the United States? What are the issues that she stands for? What is most important to her? What is her vision for the future of what our country will look like? We don't have a clear answer from her on that yet. I suspect that part of her listening tour will be to be out front and hear from Americans what they want and what their vision for the future is, and then Hillary Clinton will tell the public what her plans are.
How lasting is the damage done by the controversy of a couple weeks ago that lingers on till today about her private emails, having an email server in her home as Secretary of State?
I don't think that, you know, I don't personally see that that would be the end of a campaign for Hillary Clinton. It is just another problem for people who are suspicious of anyone with the name Clinton. Whether it be because of these emails and the servers or Benghazi or, you know, any of the things that we have heard. Frankly, since her husband first ran for president, this is something that will make the naysayers even more resolute in their beliefs that this is not that she is not a good person and that she is not someone that they want running the country. But Hillary Clinton brings out very strong emotions in people. Voters seem to either just passionately adore her or passionately dislike her. And so I think, you know, one of the challenges of this listening tour will be to show us truly who she is so that questions about, for example, Servergate, quote unquote, can be put behind her.
Mm-hmm. How important is it for Hillary Clinton to have a real competitor in the race for the nomination?
Well, you know, my personal belief is that competition everywhere is good. And I think that Hillary Clinton needs a strong person to compete against. Her book tour was flawed. It was ostensibly the beginning of an unofficial campaign. And what we saw was not a Hillary Clinton who was ready for a primetime 2016 presidential challenge. So I think competition is good. I think it's good for her not only as a candidate to make herself the best candidate she can be in 2016, but when you have real debate and real competition, people can come up with ideas that you never thought of on your own that could really make a difference in the lives of millions of Americans. And I think that alone is reason for us to see some real competition, quite frankly, on the Democratic side and the Republican side.
So let's pivot over to the Republican side. More than a dozen hopefuls there. Quite a contrast to the Democratic side. What do you see as interesting or the matchups when the funnel reduces the numbers here? Who will be left standing, you think?
Most people will not agree with me, but I believe that if Chris Christie decides to run, I think at the very end we will see Chris Christie and Jeb Bush as the final two.
Two moderates, nobody from the libertarian side, nobody from the Christian evangelical side.
I don't see it. I don't think that is the mood of the nation yet. We're still a long way away from that. But, you know, quite frankly, when you look at the demographics of the country and what the American people are interested in, most people will tell you that they are either center right or center left. They are not. Most Americans are not to the far right or to the far left. And I don't looking at the numbers right now, I don't see how a libertarian or an evangelical racks up enough electoral votes to get elected.
Mm-hmm. Rand Paul expected to announce his candidacy in the coming weeks and in the coming days, actually, and to speak in Iowa City as part of that. Where do you see the libertarian movement going?
You know, I think Rand Paul has the Rand Paul, I think, is a rising star in the party, and I think that if he is the leader of the libertarian sect of the Republican Party, what we will see in the medium to long term future in our country is a Republican Party that is more moderate and liberal on social issues. And sort of the same thing that we have seen in terms of other issues, fiscal issues in particular. You know, the thing that Rand Paul reaching out and working with Cory Booker from New Jersey and looking at, you know, sentencing and drug laws and things that are quite frankly appealing to people who are not typically a part of the Republican Party's demographics. I think it's exciting. It's interesting. It shows him as a leader, and I think it would do the Republican Party a world of good. And I think you will see more and more people who will begin to follow in his footsteps.
Michelle Bernard, you're speaking tonight at Iowa State University about how American women are changing politics. I want to use a phrase. I don't think you care for this phrase, women's issues. How do you see them playing out in 2016?
Yeah, my mantra is that all issues are women's issues. There are some issues that are a little bit more female than others, but all issues are women's issues. And I think they're going to play out a little bit differently, frankly, than we saw in 2008 and 2012. I think the days of us hearing about mortgage moms, soccer moms, terrorism moms, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are long behind us. And I think that in 2016, we will see people realizing that women should be involved in issues that range from the war and terrorism to issues such as health care. I think male candidates in particular are going to wisen up to the fact that women should not be defined just by their biology, and that we care about education reform and tax reform and Social Security reform and, you know, what's happening in the Middle East. But you will also continue to see people address issues that women find very important, but that men should find important also. This whole issue of sexual assault in the military, for example, that Kristen Gillibrand out of New York has been so incredibly, such a hard worker on in moving that issue to the public forefront. It is a quote-unquote women's issue, but it shouldn't be looked at it that way. This is an issue of national security. It is an issue of how we treat members of our military. And no woman should be in a situation where she is serving her country, but also is in fear of rape.
A couple minutes left with Michelle Bernard. Women as voters, very quickly. The number of female voters has exceeded the number of male voters in every presidential election since 1964. And women tend to vote for Democrats. Why?
Well, you know, women tend to vote for Democrats, which is what we in politics call a gender gap. But, you know, we see that shrinking. It is very interesting if you dig down in the numbers. For example, you will see that in the last election, Governor Romney actually shrank the gender gap. So more women voted for Romney than they did, for example, for Republican presidents before him. But what we see even deeper that is interesting, and I don't know how the nation grapples with that, is that typically married women with family incomes over a certain level tend to vote Republican. Women who do not necessarily have the safety net that can be provided by being married quite often find more comfort in the Democratic Party. You will see many women who were Republican who end up divorced ending up running, voting for Democrats. So it is a matter of messaging on the part of the Republican Party in what the proper role of government is when people need help.
Okay, about a minute or so left. Michelle, please comment on the controversy over Indiana's religious freedom law, the nationwide backlash from those who perceived it as allowing discrimination against gays and lesbians. Did that backlash surprise you and Governor Pence's reaction?
No, the backlash did not surprise me. It is what I expected. We have seen the attitudes of Americans all over the country finally begin to change, and for people to finally understand that that no human being should be discriminated against on any basis whatsoever. I was surprised by Governor Pence's reaction, and I think that this is good. This could swing the pendulum against conservatives for a long time to come, because the nation is just not there.
You think people will remember Indiana? I mean, Mike Pence also talked about as a presidential candidate.
Yeah, I think absolutely people will remember Indiana. I think people will remember Indiana, and people will remember North Carolina. They have been two states that have been incredibly on their face discriminatory in their actions against the LGBT community.
Okay, we have to go. It's been wonderful to talk with you. Michelle Bernard, founder, president, CEO of the Bernard Center for Women, Politics, and Public Policy. You're speaking tonight at Iowa State University. It's a lecture that's open to the public. You are the Spring 2015 Mary Louise Smith Chair in Women and Politics. Your topic tonight, how American women are changing politics. Michelle Bernard, it's been tremendous talking with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Well, it seems the countries in the Middle East are disintegrating as we watch our news. Yemen, the latest to fall apart. Tomorrow, our political analysts, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, Jim McCormick of Iowa State University, give us their thoughts on what's happening. Also, the latest on the nuclear talks with Iran and that backlash over Indiana's religious freedom law. Politics Wednesday tomorrow. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, Claire Roth. Also, thanks to Julia Davis. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.